viewers and listeners. This is your co-host, Stu, and I am here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day out.
It's still a little chilly here, and that's why I'm still in a sweatshirt. In my house, we have all electric everything. So you can imagine it gets expensive. So yeah. We try to keep the heat down as much as possible. And so we don't spend so much money and give so much money to Penelec. So we'd like to remind our viewers and listeners, especially the viewers on YouTube, if you're viewing this on YouTube and are not subscribed, please consider clicking the subscribe button down below. Click the bell so you get notified when we release content, which is usually Friday evenings around 7 p.m. Eastern time. We have the Facebook groups, the Paranormalist Podcast, the Paranormalist Group Share, and the Paranormal Asylum. And all the information for those will be down in the show notes on YouTube and in the description of the podcast if you're listening onto a podcast platform. And also we have the email address, paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com. And send us your ideas, your feedback, basically anything you want to send us, and we'll treat that with the utmost confidence.
And we've been getting some responses from people sharing stories that I want to start sharing on some of the upcoming episodes. Questions, we're getting some responses. So get your information in or your questions or your stories, please.
Excellent.
So with that said, Let's go see what I've been up to today. So what I've been up to today has been working on what's in the woods.
Okay, and you know, I don't know the topics ahead of time, so I'm as delighted probably as everybody else to hear that.
You know, I have always been a big fan of Mr. Politis's books, 411 series of books, and I grew up in the woods. I still go out in the woods a great deal, and the woods are an amazing, beautiful place. They're a place of great peace at times, but they're also a place of great fear. Throughout my life, we've had a few weird stories of things that have happened in the woods, and I've always been fascinated with the danger of the woods. So I'm going to share some stories today, and I have no answers for any of the stories I'm about to share, but I think they're fascinating. So we're going to kind of go escalating upward as we go throughout this episode. The first story I wanted to share is from a gentleman who was a tour guide out in the woods. So basically, you would hire this guy. He would take you and your family and friends and take you up in the woods, and he would help you get set up at a campsite and maybe even, you know, teach you a little bit about woodscraft. And okay. He would stay with you throughout the process. And this is a story from him, something that never quite left his head. So this would have been around the early 2000s. And he's in North Carolina taking people to a mountain that he had taken people to for many years. He was very familiar with the area, felt very comfortable doing this. It was a group of friends, and they were in their mid-20s. It was going to be an easy weekend. That's exactly how he anticipated, because, you know, there was nothing exciting going to happen. These people were all pretty healthy. They were adult enough to be able to stay together and follow the rules. You weren't worrying about children running off, old people getting sick, none of that. This was going to be a good weekend. So he's up there. He gets everybody up this mountain. It's called Mount Stringer, and he gets them all settled. They've done the singing songs and cooking hot dogs over the open fire, and everything's good. And the tents have all been put up, and the fire was laid out for morning. It's kind of a fait accompli at this point. All he has to do is just get everybody battened down for the night, and come morning, they're on their journey again. So he's got everybody in bed, and it's a beautiful late spring evening night, and he decides, instead of putting up his tent, he is going to string his hammock. There's no calls for rain or anything like that, and he just loves laying, you know, out under the stars. He has his little headlamp on, and he's going to read his book for a while and not disturb anybody and just kind of keep an eye until everything's all settled down. And that's what happens when he's reading his book. It's about 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. He looks up, and because he catches a glimpse of something moving, bobbing in the distance. And it was like a shadow. He didn't see a light or anything like that, just something moving. And if you've ever been out in the woods, you can see things that are darker than dark. They are moving in the darkness.
And that's sometimes you see things that aren't there either, too. You get yourself spooked, too.
Right. So he's laying in his hammock, and he's kind of straining his eyes, and he's looking, and he's like, what is that? And as he gets closer and closer to the campsite with the firelight and everything, it stops at that edge where that ring of light ends. You know what I'm talking about around the campsite?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it just stops right there, right behind it. But he can see it pretty good at this point, and it's a man. And the man doesn't say anything at all. Man just stands there, covered in the darkness, just a silhouette of a human being. And, you know, at first he's like, is the guy going to come in? You know, what's going on? And he's laying there watching, and the figure steps back. And he's thinking, no, this is a man. This is definitely a man. This is definitely not a bear. It's not a, definitely not an anything else he can come up with, like mountain lion, anything like that. This is a man. And as he's sitting there on his hammock, like kind of straining, he's like, what is that? What is going on? He calls out, and the figure doesn't make a sound. And he's kind of afraid of spooking everybody, and he's not sure what to make of it. And then he starts thinking about things like, does this guy maybe have a gun? You know, is he armed? I don't want to spook him. And the figure walks over and leans against a tree and just sits there staring at him for the longest time, leaning up against that tree, stared at him all night long till about 4 o'clock in the morning. The guy sitting in the hammock, he's not moving because he's watching this thing. And he said, he just had, you know how you get those chills up and down your spine, your hackles kick up, and you just know there's something really wrong?
All too well, yes.
Yeah. And that's what's happening to this guy. He's been out in the woods, you know, literally hundreds of times. This is his job. He's been doing it for years. So he can't tell anybody why, but it's really got him scared. And he said it was, you know, just the most insane thing. The guy never moved. He never shifted his weight. He never made a sound. He just stood leaning against that tree, watching them. In the morning, as it's starting to get daylight, he finally gets up off of the hammock, and he's thinking, I'm going to confront this guy. Right. And it's getting a little foggy like it does on the mountaintop, and the wisps of fog are whirling around. And he gets up, and he thinks, before everybody gets up out of their beds, I better make sure this guy is okay, that there's not going to be any problems. And as he steps a couple, two or three steps forward, the guy steps behind the tree and is just gone. Gone. There's not any footprints. There's no trampled, you know, grass around the tree or weeds. He's just gone. And he said it was the strangest camping trip of his life because while they were walking, and they would walk for a while and then they would camp that night, and then they would turn, you know, they did this for several days and then turned around and went back, doing the same thing in reverse. The whole time, he said, I felt followed. I kept feeling like I needed to keep looking backward, to the point where the people that had paid him to be their guide were concerned that he seemed like there was a problem. And he's like, I didn't really know how to tell them that there really was a problem, but there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever this was, he said, I think it followed us the whole time, out of sight, just behind. And whatever it was, not a sound. Just that terrible feeling that something's watching you.
And you're going to get worse from here, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my first one. That's my opening salvo.
Okay.
So the next story is, it's about a person who, a young lady who was in middle school, and she went on a hiking trip with her club, her Girl Scout club. And as it was getting dark, the leaders decided that they needed to get everybody back. It was getting dark. They weren't finding the markings they had been told to watch for, to know where to camp. It was unfamiliar territory. And as they went further into the woods, they began to get unsure of themselves because none of the markers that they were told to look for were there. And so as it's getting towards dusk, they say, look, we should probably turn everybody around and just go back to the cars and take everybody home for the night because we're not sure what's going on. But as they start to go back, things get confusing. the trail doesn't seem as clear as it was coming up it. And I don't know how many people have been out in the woods, but when you're out in the woods on a trail, it tends to be pretty clear. It's usually either a walking trail that has been laid out for you by a park service, or a deer trail if you're out in the wilderness. And then it's pretty well run down because the deer are going to come up and down it all the time. And the people that were hosting this camping trip for the kids really got concerned, and they got twisted up. Now, that's a terrible, horrible feeling. I've had a couple times I've been a little twisted up in the woods because you don't know where to go, and it looks like it's going on forever. So the leaders of the camping group kept walking in this one direction, thinking this has to be the way out. But instead of it coming down to the cars, it took them to a little cabin. Well, they didn't know what to do. They were hopeful that maybe this, you know, they could weather the night in this cabin. It looked like one of those cabins. You'll come across them on state and federal park services. They'll have these cabins laid out for campers and hikers. They can go in, they can get shelter. Sometimes there's some dried food in them, and they'll get you out of the weather. It was one of those things. So they kind of knocked at the door of the cabin to make sure there was nobody in it. And then they went, they tried the handle, and they realized it's an unlocked cabin. And they opened the door, and somebody shined a flashlight in. And scattered all across the floor were shoes. Just dozens upon dozens of shoes, just scattered from one end of the cabin to the other. And there's a few what they call rustic beds, basically pallets on a frame. Mm-hmm. And the shoes are all the way up under the beds. They're all across the floor. They're up against the walls. And as they go into the cabin, a couple of the kids start shining the light around on the walls in the cabin. And the walls are completely covered in this really weird writing, this script, nonsense letters strung together in over and over and over again, all over the walls. It was horrible. And there's just that feeling like you've walked into somebody else's space. Well, the leaders were talking about, you know, maybe this isn't safe. This looks really creepy. Maybe we should go someplace else. But the weather kind of decided things. It was cold and damp, and they were afraid it would start raining. The kids would get, you know, sick. So they decide, look, there's a lot of us. There's nobody in the cabin. Let's hunker down in the cabin. Somebody will sit by the door in case somebody tries to come in. We'll get the kids through the night, and come morning, we'll try to get our bearings and get out of there. So they did, but nobody wanted to sleep. Everybody was afraid. It felt like you had interrupted into somebody else's space. And before daylight, the camp masters were gathering up all the kids, getting them up on their feet. The kids were more anxious than the scout masters to get them out of there. And they started looking. Eventually, they finally did find a path that looked vaguely familiar. And they started booking down it. When they talked to the park rangers in that area and asked them about it, they denied that there was a cabin up there at all. They had never heard of it. They did not see it. They certainly did not maintain it. And she said she was always too afraid to go back up there to see if it was still there, still filled with shoes, still covered with that crazy writing. All she knew is that they shouldn't have been in there.
I wonder if that was one of those, I mean, you've referred to before about time slips, and whether that they could have been walking someplace that was a completely different time, or even, you know, somehow got, I hate to use transported, because that's such a cliched term, but I mean transported to a different place and then somehow made themselves back.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people who disappear every year all around the world. There's amazing amounts of people. It sounds insane. Hundreds of thousands of people around the world disappear every year. And many of them disappear in what we would call normal circumstances. They're walking in the woods, they're 10 feet in front of their best buddy, hoofing it up a hill, and then they're just gone. Or even in towns and cities, they're running ahead of somebody else, or they go around the turn into an alleyway, and then they are no more. When their buddy gets to them, they're just not there. So the idea is that people step into out of time places is not insane at all, nor is the idea that there are places that where time wavers and they do get transferred or transported in some way. So it's something that you see multiple times. Like, you know, have stories of, like, I remember reading in the 411 books about a man saying that he, his father, and his little son were camping, and it was a place they had camped multiple times. They were very familiar with it. The boy was about 8 years old, and they walked down to the water to go fishing. And the boy was, you know how kids are, they get antsy. And so it wasn't the opportune fishing opportunity, because when little kids are, you know, jumping up and down and playing and splashing in the creek, you don't get much fish. So they just decided to go up to the campsite. And he was literally 5 to 7 feet ahead of them, went around a little turn. They went right past that turn, you know, went through that turn as well. And all that was ahead of them was about several hundred yards of this trail, clearly marked. It was in a state park. And it ended where their campsite was. And then you would have your campsite, and then the trail would continue on past your campsite to other campsites. And the families, the ladies of the family, the mother and grandmother, were at the campsite. So if the boy had made it to the campsite, he should have been seen by his mom and grandma, who were sitting at the picnic table getting things ready for supper. But he never got there. He never went back past his dad and his grandfather. He never went forward past his mother and his grandmother. Nobody was seen coming either direction. Nobody was heard. There was no screaming. There was no anything. He was simply gone. And quite often in those stories, the children are found miles away in impossible places, on the side of a cliff, up a mountain, a steep mountain, sometimes miles and miles from where they had walked. Small children, like a three-year-old, walking 11 miles. At one point, the gentleman who did one of the shows for Discovery Channel on how to live and survive, Survivor Man, Les Stroud, he actually joined Mr. Politis, asked him to give him everything he knew about a case of a small child who had walked many, like 14 miles or something, over two mountain ranges. And then he attempted to be able to do it as a seasoned, you know, man who works in the forest, and he couldn't do it. So it's fascinating how this works. Now, my next one's a little more of a ghostly story, if you will. So this story was about a family that had a cabin out on a lake, out in the wilderness. And it was a family cabin, had been belonged to the family for many, many years. They had come up there a few times over the years. You know, it was one of those family cabins where everybody, all the brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews and aunts and uncles and everybody, kind of chips in to keep the taxes paid and take care of it. And so everybody gets a weekend or two to go up there. One of those. We have some of those in my family.
A family timeshare.
Yeah, kind of a family timeshare. That's a great way to put it. So anyway, it's on a wilderness, borders a wilderness preserve and some state game land in that state. So there really was nothing else up there. Had been there so long, it was grandfathered in when everything else got bought and still belonged to them. So this family's up there, they're kind of cleaning up the place. That was their weekend, and, you know, making sure everything would be nice. And they found, when they got into the cabin, like 40 pairs of women's shoes scattered all around on the first floor of this cabin. And somebody said, one of the people said, you know, I always heard there was an old settlement down the way. And so they decided to walk the man and his son, the son was about 12. And they decided they were going to take a little walk and look around and see if there was maybe somebody like hanging out around there, because all these shoes, like they couldn't imagine everybody that came up there for the last year or two had left their shoes. I mean, it didn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So they go walking and they take off. They're about 30 minutes into this walk when they come across this old, looks like a little town. And like the guy that he'd grown up in this area, you know, he didn't know there was any such thing. And he said, you know, the houses were in pretty bad shape. A lot of them had holes in the floor and stuff like that. But they came across this one And it was in a lot better shape than the other ones. There had been no holes in the roof, so it hadn't rotted through like some of the others had. And they're poking around, and again, they find some women's shoes. They don't find any of the animal bones or the rotting floors that they'd found in some of the other houses. And the guy says, let's see if the stairs are good. We'll go up the stairs. They go up the stairs, and there's this bed, and it's made up just like somebody got out of it, except it's covered in a thick layer of dust. Even the imprint of the head has hollowed out the pillow, and it's still like that. But again, everything's covered in a bunch of dust. And laying on the foot of the bed is a old-fashioned, like, mink fur coat. It's a very expensive. You can tell it was once a very expensive coat. Looks like it has a couple little moth holes in it, but nothing else. And so the dad and the son are looking at it, and the son said he got this real feeling like, we need to get out of here. Like, we are invading somebody else's territory. And he said to his dad, come on, let's go. And his dad said, wait a second. I want to look at this coat. And he realizes it's worth a lot of money. And he says, I think I'm just going to take this old coat with us. Maybe I can have them redo it, and I'll give it to your mom for a surprise. So they go out of the house, and he makes a joke about his dad being very frugal. So he's like, this is something my dad would do. So they're out of the house, and they're kind of at the edge of this little abandoned area that's all grown up with houses and what have you. And he said, I turned around and he looked, and he could see a woman standing in the window of that little house where the coat had come out of. And he grabbed his dad's arm, and he's like, Dad, look, there's somebody up there. I think you stole somebody's coat. You better put it back. She doesn't look very happy. So his dad turned around, and he saw a figure in the window. He couldn't tell who it was, or at least he told the boy he couldn't tell who it was. But then he decided to walk back. He walked back, walked in the house, and he said, I could see her clearly. I don't care what my dad said. You know, she had a blue shawl on over a white, cream white blouse. And she was standing there staring at us. She looked angry to me. And as his dad's going in and up the stairs, she's still standing there looking out at him. And then she's just gone. And he said, my dad suddenly yelled and he came running out. And he wouldn't tell. He said, nothing happened. He's like, I just put that stupid old coat back. I don't want to talk about it. And he said, my dad never would talk about what happened in there. But I know that something had to have happened because, you know, he was pretty rattled. And after that, he wanted to go back and explore the place again. And he said, my father kept saying, oh, you know, that you imagined it. It was just an old abandoned house. There wasn't a whole bunch of them up there. And he just refused to acknowledge it throughout the rest of his life. He said, and by the time I got old enough to, as an adult, to go back by myself, somehow I had decided that it was probably better not to. Even though he was sure that there would still be remnants there to prove that he was right.
And a fur coat. Yeah.
And a fur coat, mm-hmm. Apparently, yes. Maybe a little more moth-eaten, but a fur coat. I wanted to move into some of the more scary stories, if you don't mind.
Oh, I don't mind at all.
Oh, good.
Because it's daylight.
Yes, I know. So I'm going to tell you a story that took place in 2016. This was a personal yoga retreat in Colorado. This lady went there. She was anticipating having a wonderful, peaceful weekend. And, you know, they do the yoga and the stretching, and they have these clearly cut paths you can take down through the woods. It's all very manicured for wilderness, if you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Very well-marked paths, markers along the way. It's a place where you should not be able to get disoriented. So she decides in the afternoon she's going to take a walk. It's gorgeous, and it's just something she felt she needed to do. She wanted to go for a hike. So she sets out. She's got her little water bottle on her hip and her little jacket in case it gets chilly, and she's just a bopping along and having a good time. When at one point in the trail, she just suddenly feels like there's something odd. She looks and she sees a sign. Now, most of the signs on the trail had been on sticks that were dug in and, you know, set into the ground with a arrow and a name or something saying, go off this way. This is such and such trail. But there was a sign, and it was painted and it was nailed to a tree about 7 or 8 feet off the little road that she's walking on, this little trail. So she steps off the trail to go up to the sign and read it. And that's when things get weird. She's like, it was, you know, an easy to read sign. And she read the sign and she turned around and it didn't say anything that was of any real importance. She just had read it and it said a name and pointed in a direction. And that was that. She said, but when I turned back around to go back to the trail, it wasn't there. It looked like a completely different location. She kept thinking, that's impossible. I couldn't have gotten lost. I only walked like 6 feet off the trail. And so she starts to feel panic walk, you know, working up inside of her, because it is impossible to walk 6 feet off the trail and then turn around and it not be there. But it's not there. It doesn't look the same at all. There's no clear-cut path. There's no markers along it. It was woods, just woods. And she doesn't recognize anything. She doesn't recognize the trees that are there. She doesn't recognize anything along this. So she starts kind of circling the area carefully, staying around that tree where the sign is. That's something familiar, at least. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to get off of it too far. And she starts walking around it in kind of concentric circles, going outward a little ways, trying to find something to give her her bearings again. And she still couldn't figure it out. She retraces her steps back to the tree and it doesn't make sense. There's nothing here that looks right to her. Nothing. So she decides, okay, look, I know I came up this a hill. There's a hill here. It doesn't look like the right hill. It doesn't seem to be the same hill. It's not got a trail on this hill, but it's a hill. I got to go back down. So she starts walking back down and she comes to a barbed wire fence and she starts walking along the barbed wire fence trying to find an opening. And it seems like it just keeps going and going. And she's like, that's impossible. I walked down a hill. There can't be a barbed wire fence all around. So she keeps walking. She's trying not to panic. She's getting really antsy now. She's getting scared. And she said she saw like a little field and it looked like the right way to go. But something inside of her said, don't you dare. She just had this feeling like, if I go that direction, I'm not going to get found. So she decides not to head in that direction. She thought, I know, I'll call my husband. He's, you know, 30 miles away at home, but I'll tell him that I'm lost. I'll tell him what I see and it'll be okay. Now, she had checked her service going up and she had service. Now she doesn't. And now she's getting a little more panicky. And that's when she hears voices. They're in the distance, the people talking. She can't tell what they're saying, but she can hear that they're talking. And she thinks, oh, this is good. This is a good thing. These people will know where the trail is. There'll be somebody I can follow back. Even if it's not to the same place where I started, it's at least a civilization. I can figure this out now. So she's watching and she hears them, but she doesn't see them. So she starts calling out, hello, hello, where are you at? Looking for something to move, the bushes, the shrubs, something. The voices keep coming, but there's nobody there. She said she felt small, like she was being an experiment. Somebody was watching. And suddenly she had this terrifying feeling that somebody was watching. And she thought, this is how people go missing. This is what happens. They get lost. They get confused. Things change in the woods on them. They don't do anything on purpose to get lost. The woods shift. They change. They eat you. They swallow you up. And she's trying very hard to fight that terror because, you know, you get terrified, you make stupid decisions. And she knows that. So she's trying not to. And she just kept going. She found a hole in the fence and she could hear the voices, but they weren't people that she could see. And she keeps walking and walking. And she's like, I walked three times as long as I did going up. I couldn't understand it. But suddenly there in front of her was a pond. And beyond the pond was the yoga center. She took off running. She gets around the side of the pond. There's some benches. She throws herself down on the benches. She's exhausted. And she just sits there. She said, it felt like no matter how fast I ran, I was moving in slow motion. And I just sat down. I was winded. I was shaken. I was scared. And she sat there for quite a long time. She couldn't think. She said she felt dazed and confused. And when somebody noticed her sitting out there by herself, she'd been there for quite a while, they went down to see if she was okay. She didn't come in to eat. And she said, I was still sitting there just staring at the water, completely dazed. I wasn't thinking anymore. All I could tell you was that my eyes were burning, like I had been doused in some sort of a chemical. For days, my skin was red and I was confused. And she's like, I never will go back into the woods like that again. And I just thought that was an interesting story, because I think that is what happens to a lot of people, is that they end up that the woods change on them. Now, whether that means that they literally get transported to someplace else or shift dimensions or whatever that ends up being, I'm not sure. But it is a very scary feeling to look around and realize that nothing you see is familiar, and it should be. I've spent a lot of time doing research on the Appalachian Trail, and I'm fascinated with stories from the Appalachian Trail. There are so many amazing stories, but interestingly enough, there are stories like this on the Appalachian Trail as well. We're going to talk about another one. And again, it was a young woman. She's in North Carolina on the Tennessee border between North Carolina and Tennessee, and she's out hiking, taking photos with her husband and her kids. They're on a well-established trail in the Great Smokies. And there's actually like pavilions that are sitting up high where you can look out over and see the panoramic view and take photographs and that kind of thing. So she's up there, she's got her 6-year-old son, her other two children who were older than this little boy, and her husband. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's cars out at the parking lot. Obviously there's other people around somewhere. And they climb up on this deck to look out over the mountaintop and take some photographs. And she said, all of a sudden, her son, who's 6, starts crying. And she's like, what's wrong? And he's like, my head hurts. My head hurts. Make the sound stop. Make the sound stop. And tears are coming out of his eyes. And he's holding his head like he's in pain. And she's like, what is going on? I don't know. And she said, I just suddenly had this horrible fear that I needed to get him away from there. And she said, I could feel like pressure pushing down on me as though there was a force. She grabs her son. She doesn't say anything to her husband and her other two kids. And she takes off running. She just felt she had to get him away from this area. As she's going along running, her husband doesn't say anything to her. I'm sort of surprised, because you would think, you know, if my significant other grabs up one of the kids and takes off at a run, I'd be like, hey, what's going on? You know, and I'd be going after them to see if the kid just got hurt or something.
Right.
But that's not what happens. She keeps on running, and she's like, the weight of her son was slowing her down, but she just felt like she couldn't stop. And she said, it was like the air was starting to squeeze out of me. The further I went, the harder it was to breathe. I couldn't get any air, and the air was completely still. Like there was not a bit of breeze there. It was like trying to breathe fog. And I don't know if anybody's ever been in severe fog, but it's wet and dank and it fills your lungs and you can't get enough air. It's a really odd feeling. And her son's still crying. My ears hurt. My eyes hurt. My head hurts. Mommy, make it stop. Make it stop. And she said, now the hair's up on the back of her neck. She's really got this terrible sick feeling. She begins to think that whatever's going on is going to literally suck them up right off the road, the pathway she's running down. She hasn't got the presence of mind to say anything. And she said there was this point where suddenly there was this horrible, ominous feeling, something heavy, like it was pressing on her. And she said, I was afraid to look up. I was afraid to look down. I just kept looking at my son's face, and I was running as hard as I could. And she finally bursts out into the parking area, and there's her car. She gets over to the car. Suddenly, her son stops crying. He says, I feel better, Mommy. My head doesn't hurt. And she's like, I could breathe suddenly. She gets into the car, and Then she realizes her husband has the keys. So she gets back out of the car and she's sitting on the hood of the car with her son, watching that trail, hoping that they come. Now she's thinking, what if whatever was after us got my husband and my other two children? What if they don't come back? And eventually her middle boy, who's about 13, comes bursting off of the trail and he screams, "Dad, Dad, they're over here." And he's crying. And her husband comes running with a little girl by the hand and he comes bursting out and he's yelling at her, "What the hell happened? You know, what are you doing?" And he's like, she's like, "I'm at the car. What's wrong with you?" And he's like, "You've been gone for 3.5 hours. We've been looking for you guys. We've had people calling the park rangers to come and help us." She's like, "That's ridiculous. It's only been 10 minutes since I came out of there. Maybe 20 minutes, the whole event." And he's like, "No, it's been 3.5 hours since you took off with him." She gets in the car and she looks at the dashboard when he turns on the car. And it's been 3.5 hours. And she says, "I don't know what happened. I don't know where the time went. I know we were gone up there. It was about a 10-minute walk up to that platform. So it had to be about a 10-minute run or less back. I don't know where the time went." And she said, "I started thinking about all those stories and I started to wonder, is this what happens to some of these people?"
And, you know, all the stories you've been telling are the lucky ones that got to come back and tell the story. So we don't know about the ones that don't come back.
Well, it's interesting because, like, I know that David Paulides makes the comment in the book that the people that come back usually are people who are too old or are handicapped or are too young to tell anything. And interestingly enough, I started collecting these stories up and I'm realizing maybe these are the same people that in the same position, but they are the lucky ones. You're right. Maybe these are the people telling the story of what really happens to those people that we weren't connecting all the dots at that time because, you know, we just didn't know to collect the dots. And now maybe this is the answer. Maybe this is what's going on. At least one of the things. I mean, there's a story in one of his books where there's a little boy who's taken and about 4 minutes later, a family's having a picnic a little further down in the woods. And they look up and they see what they describe as a man in a fur coat with a bundle over his shoulder. And they don't know about the little boy missing. So they don't make the connection until they go to leave the park that day. And the park rangers are stopping everybody coming out. And they're like, "Hey, have you seen anything? This little fellow here is missing." And he's like, "Oh, crap." And then he says, "I think we saw something. I don't know if it makes any sense, but it was it looked like a big man in a fur coat running. And he had a bundle over his shoulder and it was moving whatever was in the bundle." And he's like, "I don't know if that counts or doesn't, but that's what we saw." So, I mean, that's a possibility that people get taken by Bigfoots or by something else that's in the woods. There are feral people who live in the woods, for that matter. And I mean, it's not fiction. There are, every forest ranger and campsite will have had their stories. People that just go off grid and they just move up into the woods and live, things like that. And it happens for whatever the reason. But in stories like this, they just disappear. So this next story is about a guy and his girlfriend, and they're out in the woods on a hiking trail. And as they're going along, they start to notice that the tree branches are broken about 8 foot up in the air. Nothing lower is broken, just at about the 8 foot high range. And they're snapped off as though something went along breaking them off. And they thought, that's really weird. And then they begin to get this feeling like they're being watched. They keep walking and they could see that there were other hikers in the area. You could, off on another trail, you know, you could just kind of see them through the distance, the color of their clothing as they're moving along. And he said, "I just got this feeling that there was somebody behind me. I kept turning around to look, and I kept saying to my girlfriend, stay in front of me, stay in front of me. I'm gonna stay behind you just in case, because he thought whatever was falling or whoever was following them was a danger, and he wanted to make sure she stayed safe. So he turns around and he said, all of a sudden he sees this woman, and she's all in red. It's a red coat, red pants, red everything. And she's moving along really slow, like she's just walking. But he said it was, his description of it is this way. It's like watching a person on a fast escalator. They're walking on the escalator slowly, but the escalator's shooting them forward fast. He's like, she was moving way too fast for how fast she was walking. And he said, I was really panicked. There's something about this woman and the way she was coming at me, and her eyes met mine, and I was scared to death, and I didn't know what to do. She was glaring at him, and he said she was completely normal. He's like, she was a lady in her mid-50s. She had on a red winter coat, and he said there was no sound. She was walking on through the woods, and he said you couldn't hear her feet tramping on branches. You couldn't hear anything. Just her moving fast, even though she didn't appear to be. She was moving faster than she should have been for the amount of energy she was pushing out. He said, and it scared him. He said, the next thing I know, she's right there, right in front of us. And I said, I could see her very clearly. She had no shadows. She had no definition. Nothing you would expect when you see a person. Like, you know, if I'm looking at you right now, I can see a little shadow around your eyes. And, you know, at your chin, where your lip is. It's just normal. We see that stuff. There was none of that. She was just a stark, cutout figure. But she was alive, and she was moving. And he said he kept yelling at his girlfriend, keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. And he's trying to keep going forward. And finally, he spun around and looked for her again, and she was gone. There was no place for her to go. It was open woods where you can see for quite a distance.
Right.
He said, I looked down where those people were, and I could see them still walking along, but none of them had red on. And he's like, I have no idea. She just vanished. He said, and I want to make sure people understand. There were no drugs, no alcohol, nothing. I was just walking through the woods when this happened. And he said it was something that shocked him so bad that he's like, I just don't go out in the woods anymore because I can't explain what I saw. His girlfriend didn't see her, but she could feel the panic, and she was moving fast because of that. And he said, I have no idea what it was.
Do you have any clues? Any thoughts?
No. I won't say that I have any. I have some thoughts. I don't know that I have the answer. There are things that will masquerade as human. It could have been a ghost. It could have been one of those elemental type things masquerading as a human. Maybe we are part of a large experiment, and there are things that pick us up and experiment on us, and they get us when we're by ourselves or nearly by ourselves. And it's maybe we do shift dimension or time. I think that there's not going to ever be a single answer. I think that different ones have different possibilities. But if the whole thing starts out with maybe it's different ways they get you, I keep hearing over and over they felt like they were part of an experiment, like somebody was observing them. They were being tested in some way. Maybe there is somebody watching. We watch animals in the wild and observe them, put them in situations to see how they react. National Geographic is filled with that sort of thing. What if somebody watches us?
You're making me think of that Stephen King novel, Under the Dome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've read that or not, but you know, those people were an experiment.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, what if they do experiment by watching us under certain circumstances and observing our reactions?
Now, although Stephen King is supposed to be fiction, but how many times, I mean, if you think of something, it probably exists someplace, somewhere, you know?
Sure, I mean, we, well, and it's, it is something that we do ourselves. We observe things and we don't think about how frightening it might be to that water buffalo, that the thing with the scary lens line, eye flashing light is watching it. We don't. We think that it, the justification for it is the information we get from it or the entertainment we get from it. We don't care that we're frightening something else. So what's to say there's not something out there watching us, observing our actions?
By the same token, I mean, if we, if when I say we, not you or I specifically, but we as a human race do that to things that we deem to be inferior creatures, then the whoever may be doing it to us thinks that we are inferior creatures as well. So,
and it's very, very possible. And I literally came up with dozens and dozens of these stories, and I will pass one more along and then we will call it an afternoon. So this was another story about a family camping in the woods near a remote lake in California. And during the day, I was like two or three family members and their spouses and their kids. So during the day, these two ladies, their cousins, they decide they're going to go for a walk. And they've been there before. They know it. It's pretty area. They're fairly familiar. So the two ladies decide to go for this walk and they're out there and all of a sudden they hear what sounds like faint rhythmic drumming, just faintly in the distance, just like somebody tapping a drum at a great distance. And as they're walking along, it gets louder and louder. And she's finally looking around. She's like, "Do you hear that?" And her friends, her cousins like, "Yeah, I hear that. What is it?" And it gets louder the further they're going, and they sort of get unnerved, and they're like, "What is that?" Now it's getting louder and louder, even though they've stopped. It's like it's coming towards them, around them, and it's getting to a steady, dull beat. And she describes it like a drone quality, almost like something was droning on. She said, "I felt it in my heart. I felt it in my skin. I felt it in my brain." She could feel that thudding. I don't know if anybody's ever had this experience. Not everybody notices this, but I, if you're playing heavy bass music, mm-hmm. you can feel it in your chest.
Oh, sure.
It takes your breath away. And I think that might be something like what she's talking about. And she said she just kept putting one foot in front of the other, staying up with her cousin. And she said, all of a sudden, it got very peaceful. And I thought, "I'm okay." And she said, "I just kept on walking. And I was like, I was asleep or I was dreaming. Part of me wanted to turn and go back. Part of me was like, no, you just have to keep coming this direction, sweetie. Keep coming, keep coming. Yeah." And she said it was a dreamlike state. And so they keep going forward. They come to this place where there's water, and about a 6 foot up in the air is a little waterfall. And they're watching it and looking at it. And she's like, "We just stopped. And we were both in a daze. We're looking at the water. Nobody said anything. And I'm thinking we should turn around. We should turn around. But I can't say the words. I can't make my mouth form them." And that scares her on one level. But on the other level, she's completely calm, almost as though she's been divorced from her emotion. And she's standing there watching this, and she said, "I noticed that there are little colorful stones on the bottom of the water where the waterfall comes down." And then suddenly the beat of that drum builds back up very quickly, and it starts to envelope her. And she said, I felt this intense feeling to climb up that side of that mountain and onto that waterfall. Like I needed to keep going up that mountain forever. Just keep going. And she said, it was such a long time. I was standing there looking at this, trying to fight this impulse. And finally her cousin said, "I think if we keep going, we'll never come back." And she said, that's what broke the spell for her. She said, "I looked at my cousin, and my cousin looked just like me, completely dazed. And suddenly," she said, "I didn't say a word. I just took off running, and my cousin started running as fast as she could, and we were leaping over, sticks and logs and anything that was in our way. Like, we were moving as fast as we humanly could down that mountain." And she said, as we descended, that foggy feeling began to clear up. We weren't like we were in a daze anymore. And the more it cleared up, the more fear she had. And the faster she ran until they were both stumbling and she said, I was covered in goose flesh. I was yelling, hurry, 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 hurry. And she said, suddenly I got down to the area where I could see the camp. And all I could remember thinking, and she said, we both spontaneously said the words out loud, oh, thank you. And we began to giggle and we slowed down. We didn't want our husbands to see us like this. And my cousin looked at me and said, we have a great imagination, don't we? And she said, in that moment, something left a great big snap, almost like a tree was snapped in half. She said, and every hair on my body stood up. And I knew that if we hadn't turned around at the waterfall, we would never have left that mountain again. And she said, when we got back to the camp, I told my husband, we have to leave. And we all packed up and we decided to never go there again.
Yeah, probably for a good reason. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really interesting story. Whatever's going on, at least in some of the cases, you have that intense fear. You hear that feeling of being watched. You have that, sometimes that pressure. The drumming was interesting because that's a very audible sound and it's literally building the longer they're in whatever that space was. And then you have the child crying about the pressure in his head, his ears are hurting. And he had a terrible headache. And once they got away from that area, it was completely gone. He had never had headaches before like that. He would never report having another. I think there's an instinct inside of us that tells us there's something else out there. And it doesn't want us to go home. Much as I love the woods, I'm always very cautious because I know that out there, in any way, size, shape, and form, if you make a misstep, you could end up dying. Whether it's you decide to go out by yourself and you know, you're walking along and you slip on a mossy rock or something happens and you walk up to the wrong people or, you know, you twist your leg climbing someplace you probably shouldn't because you're now 60 years old, not 20, you know, whatever it is, or something like this. So I don't know what's out there. I will keep going to the woods because that's who I am, but it's a fascinating subject. And I just thought I would like to share some of these stories today.
I'm glad you did. Yeah, I enjoyed those a lot. I've always enjoyed just being in the woods, especially when I'm alone and it's quiet. You know, because even camping. Although most of the camping I've done in the last couple of decades has been in state parks, crowded state parks where you hear nothing but other people, and. But just to be, even the times that I was, when I was younger and I would go hunting in the woods, just me sitting there and it was just so peaceful and I enjoyed that. But I never really had any experiences like what you're describing, except it was probably less than a quarter mile from the house that I grew up in. And I think I've told you about this before. Now I called it a corner because it was defined by a fence row on one side and then a farmer's field on the other side. And then a fence row on this side that had kind of been maybe bulldozed away so that it wasn't quite a fence row anymore. Mm-hmm. But you had to walk through woods to get to it. I mean, there was no, when I say, I'm talking scrub woods. I mean, no old growth forest or anything like that. But,
right.
And 100 yards behind me, there was an old derelict house and a barn. And then I said, there's a farmer's field. And then, probably 250 yards, then that farmer's house. But I called this a corner. And anytime I walked into there, it was the strangest feeling. And it was almost like there was vegetation. There were ferns that I hadn't seen anyplace else around there. And I don't know if that's because, the land was developed and that was an older growth there. But I mean, it just always had that the strangest feeling. I mean, I didn't hear a thrum or anything or drum beat or anything like that, but it was almost like I was in a different time, even though I could turn around and walk back out of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't that large. And very recently, probably within the last 2 years, I went to go back to see if I could find it again. And that area had been cleared, and there was a building there. I didn't know what the building was. And I found out later on, it's because, you know, the area where I grew up in Center County, there was so much growth of houses up this large hill. That was actually a pumping station.
Oh, okay.
For those houses. But I just, it was always the strangest feeling anytime I went into that place. You know, so I as a kid, you do things. I mean, you're wandering around, and you know, you're just looking for something to do. Back in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, that's what you did. I mean, we didn't have phones to look at, you know.
Yeah, no, I was that kid. I was out in the woods all the time, every day in the summer, most of the evenings, in the afternoons after school. That's what we did. We went out in the woods, or I went out by myself. I was out in the woods a great deal as a kid. Nobody ever questioned it. Mom would always say, stay within yelling range, Pat. Mm-hmm. And that would be the end of it. And, you know, there were places I really enjoyed going, and other places I kind of made a loop around because they just made me uncomfortable. But I think that was just normal for kids in the country in the 60s and 70s. Mm. Nobody questioned it.
Well, no. And as long as you came home for dinner time, and if you went out after dinner, you're supposed to get home before the streetlights came on, if there were streetlights.
Yeah. So, yeah, we didn't have streetlights. We just had to get back by dark. Uh-huh. Mom would come out at dusk and yell for us, and if we didn't answer, we were in trouble. Yeah. But, you know, it just was what it was. And I think the weirdest things that ever happened for us in the woods were, this was actually something happened to my oldest son when he was a little boy. So on the farm where his dad grew up, this was my son made the third generation on that ground. And they were going camping, his grandpap and him, and they had done it 1,000 times. It was definitely ground we knew well. There was not an ounce of that inch of that ground that we did not walk, because it was the family property, and you went down there and gathered tea berry and boneset tea and spicewood tea, and you know, you just were all over that place all the time. You knew it well. So it was a beautiful sunny late summer evening. They decide to go down, and they have the little tent put up, and they're gonna cook supper over the open fire, the whole nine yards. They took this little white dog with them. And his grandfather had a four-wheeler. So he zipped on down to the woods, got this all set up. They ate their supper, and it was getting dark, and they talked for a while and let the fire start to die down. And along the creek, there's something that's like a little island. It's like the creek separates into two smaller streams. There's this island of high ground, and it's not very big. You could walk across it in 4 minutes, and then it kind of goes back together and becomes a creek again down below that. And they hear this yodel, like, on that island of ground, and the dog goes crazy. It doesn't bark. It's just a puppy. It's like two-thirds grown. It dives into the tent, and it's scared to death, and is, you know, they're listening to it, and it does it a second time. And then they hear the splashing in the water. And grandfather grabs my son, and he reached down and yelled for the dog. He said he almost left the dog behind because the dog didn't want to come out of the tent. And he threw the dog on his lap. He yelled at my son to get on the four-wheeler. They did. And he said you could hear it splashing across the creek at that point, whatever it was. And it was still that doing that mewling sound. And he said, I just took off up the road. It's like 10:30 at night, and I'm just getting ready to turn the lights off and go to bed. And I hear the four-wheeler coming, and it's coming hell for leather. And I look out, and I can see it, and I mean, it's coming fast. And normally, he would never drive like that at night, because you never know. You could hit a deer, or there's a piece of wood that falls down. It's something. It's in the woods. And he comes flying up, he jumps off, and I run to the door. I'm thinking Danny got hurt. And he comes barreling in. Thank goodness I had the door unlocked by then. And they're both winded. The dog is shaking. And he slams the door shut, and he goes, get the gun. So I go running back, and I wake Gary up, and I'm like, dad wants a gun. So he comes out with two guns, and he's like, what's going on? And his dad explains, something large came across that island, came across that water, and followed him running behind that four-wheeler as fast as he was going, and made it all the way up the road, the cow lane, to the house. And it stopped at the edge of the barn. So, like, right across from our house was a little driveway and a barn. That's the last time he heard it. So they went out looking around. Now, just to make sure people understand, officially, in Pennsylvania, there are no mountain lions.
I was...
No bobcats anymore.
Yep, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No black panthers. None of that stuff, officially. But whatever it was, I think that one was a cat, because there was an old abandoned sawmill down in the woods. And they had gone down there to, you know, he took Danny down there to check it out a couple times. And the last time they had been down there, he had said something about it sunk like cat pee, but really, really strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if the cat took up residence down there in that big pile of logs. You know, there was hollowed out places where the logs were kind of just laying all mismatchy. And I don't know. But whatever it was, it scared the bejeebers out of a guy who had been on that property for 60 years.
Well, having been out in the woods and gone for, you know, hunting in Pennsylvania, it's been decades since I've even thought about even hunting. I've heard just about every noise in the woods that you can hear. But I've seen YouTube videos of interactions, you know, fighting between two mountain lions. And the noise that comes out of them is nothing that I had ever heard before, except once. When I was in Boy Scouts, and our Boy Scout leader would take us on weekend camping trips. Mm-hmm. And this particular weekend, we went to this hunting camp that, you know, it was an acquaintance, and so he got to take us to the hunting camp. And the way to get to it, it was in Center County, and you're going along the main road, and then you turned off into a hollow, okay? Which, again, this particular road, there's hollow after hollow after hollow.
Right.
You get down this hollow, and then the road starts to go up a little bit, but you make a left kind of diagonally and go down, and you are, you actually have to drive across a really small stream, and then on the other side, there's the hunting camp. And there's a large field, you know, because they would do, you know, skeet shooting and what else in the field. So it was cleared out. And then there was a trail that went up to the top of the mountain. We actually took a hike up there when we were there. But we were out, I think we were playing Frisbee in the yard. And we called it a yard. I mean, this field, it was fairly short, you know, I mean, you know, stubbly. So it wasn't, you know, really tall grass or anything like that. And we heard this ungodly sound coming from the top of the mountain. Now, this was the previous day we had hiked up to the top of it and come back. So this was, that was Friday night. So, and the day we were playing and heard the noise was Saturday. You know, we said, is that one of our leaders? And then we checked and, you know, no, they were all accounted for. You know, one was in the cabin. One was in the little cabin with the crescent moon on the door. This was just a really spooky kind of place. At the one end of this field, again, there's no road to get there. This was the oddest part. And it was like just the front porch of a derelict house. There was nothing rest of it, but it was facing. So the main road was probably a good 100 yards, maybe 200 yards away, you know, going up the hill. But there was a house number on one of the posts left on this facing someplace where there's no road, which was kind of a weird situation. But yeah, we heard that sound and we had no idea what that was. But it was kind of like an ungodly shrieking noise.
Yeah.
And it was like nothing I had ever heard before. So, but it didn't persist. You know, it was just there and then it was gone. But yeah, that was the first time I heard a noise in the woods that I had no clue what it was.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that happen. I had a good, this is the last story I'll tell completely for the day. I know we said that, then we got to talking. years ago, about 5-6 years ago, I was down visiting a girlfriend of mine in West Virginia, and she lives back in the woods. She lived a mile back of Lane, back in a woods. There was like some old abandoned fields and a right of way that was cut out for the electric company to go back up in there and check wires. Other than that, it was just all woods, and her house was the only house back there. This, and she had built a huge wraparound front porch on the property, and then she, at the back, she had built a smaller porch that was kind of like a patio you stepped out onto from the basement. The basement was completely finished, so you could actually have had an apartment in the basement, and I think that's what the original intent had been. So there were bedrooms, a big open area that could have been a kitchen and a living room, and then these French doors that opened out onto this little patio. And my friend, I was staying with her for a few weeks, and my friend had somebody come to visit, and they just decided they were going to stay down on the basement level and sleep in the bedroom down there. So that was fine. And my son was sleeping down there too, in another one of the bedrooms. Like I said, this house had like 24 rooms. It was huge. So my son's down there sleeping, and this other person's down there sleeping, and my son came up. Now, he's about 19 at the time. And in the middle of the night, he wakes me up, and he's like, Mom, you got to come down now. And I'm like, okay. And he had been telling me about seeing this thing with yellow eyes. And I said, well, maybe it's a deer, you know, because I get that eye shine thing.
Mm-hmm.
He kept saying, no, it's not that. And he had seen it a couple times. So he had chosen to take the bedroom that was the furthest back into the house. And then he would lock the door between the kitchen living room area and the French doors. He'd lock that area up at night because he said he was afraid whatever it was would come in the building. And even though all the doors were locked, the French doors were locked, and then he locked the door to the living room, and then you'd had to go down the hallway to go to his room, he was really rattled. So I got up and I went down, and this other person was standing at the doors, and he looked like he was ready to have a heart attack. Like, this guy was really rattled. And he was a city guy. So I said to him, what's wrong? And he's like, it's out there. You've got to watch it. And I'm like, what's out there? So I go to the French doors and I'm watching. And it was almost like watching a green haze moving along. Almost like if you could imagine what it would be like to see that when you look over a fire and you see that wavering of the heat.
Mm-hmm.
But with a slight green tinge to it. And I'm watching it and I'm like, what the heck is that? And it sort of turned, and then you caught a flash of yellow eyes. And I'm me, so I go, I'm going out. And the guy's like, oh my God, you're insane. And I'm like, nope, I'm going out. Got to figure out what this is. And I open the doors and I go out and I stop dead. And I go, oh my goodness. My son's right behind me because God bless him. He was going to protect me. And he goes, Mom, what is it? And I said, that's an elemental. I've never seen one like that.
That's what the first thing that went through my head. Yeah.
And I'm watching this thing, and it's pacing right beyond. There's like a little fenced in area for the dogs right beyond that patio. And I'm watching it, and he sees it too. And he's like, that's what I'm telling you. That's the eye they keep seeing looking in the windows, Mom. And I'm like, okay. I get it. And so I'm watching this thing, and it's watching me watch it. And I'm like, okay. I've never met one like you. I've met the cousin. I described them the way they look. This was like a green lizardy one. I don't know how else to explain it. The other ones are like little cousinets. They're long and hairy and kind of don't have much definition or shape. There's others as well. But I'd never met one like this. So I'm watching it. And eventually I said to my son, I said, you know, I'm going to do some prayer work to keep that thing on that side of the fence for right now. But we're going to have to deal with this. So we do the prayer work and we go back in the house and I lock the doors. And then he said, you're going to tell her? And I'm telling my friend. And I said, no, there's no reason to tell her. She'll be upset. Well, the next day when I come home, she's like, tell me what you guys saw last night. And I'm like, Ben. He's like, well, I had to tell her, Mom, it's her house. And then she says her daughter had experiences with this. And it was one of the reasons she moved out, because it had frightened her so much. So over the course of about 2 weeks, I figured out how to keep it on that side. You can't make it go away. It belongs to the ground.
That's its territory. Yeah.
Yeah. but I can keep it on that side of the fence. And this person, like, he left like within 24 hours. He was like, I don't even want to go sleep in that house ever again. But it was an elemental. And I know that some of what people are seeing are elementals as well.
Now that's a good way to end.
So with that, good night.
Good night, Patty.